Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's episode 2, season 7. Before we go any further, we need to obviously acknowledge the fact that there was an incident on Rally Monte Carlo. It was very, very sad. I don't feel like we should be discussing it other than to pass on our condolences to all concerned, and we'll move forward and we're going to talk about the rally. Right, so normally at this point of the programme, I'll look to my left and I've normally got Jack Bennion, and I'll say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
Normally I'd say to my right, but in this instance, he's smack bang right in the middle. I'll say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello.
And over on my right is Julian Porter. Hello, Julian Porter.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
Hello. See, this is how we normally start, Jules. You know, I know you come in as a high-profile guest and everything else, but normally when we start, this is how we kind of introduce it and everything else. So, boys, there's no news this week. In fact, the only news, really, is Rally Monte Carlo, which is why I thought I'd get the man who was doing the tweets for Autosport, and I'd get the man who was watching it at home, like me, in Ryan Champion, and the man who was doing the TV commentary stage end, just milling about, generally getting involved, and everything else, i.e. Julian Porter, involved in this particular podcast. So, hello all.
Hello.
You can all say hello to one another, it's fine. First thing I want to ask, right, and this is purely from a geeky point of view, before we go any further, I know the boys probably thinking the same, Jules, You were there. You physically seen all those cars. It wasn't a letdown, was it?
It wasn't a letdown, and there's some nice touches on each of the cars. You know, when you start to really like, if you're going full geeky spec, there's some nice touches on a lot of the cars, on all of the cars. Individual things that are really nice, and yeah, they're nice. They sound great. You watch some of those videos from WRC TV, from YouTube, wherever. And they are making a very, very nice noise as well.
I don't know about you, Ray. Right, I watched it at home when I watched WRC Plus, and I picked up bits and pieces on Red Bull TV, and obviously you've seen the bits and pieces on social media. This is why I wanted to get Jules on, because they even sounded different to some of the test videos we'd seen.
Yeah, I mean, during testing, I guess, and we heard some really distinctive, unusual noises during testing as well, didn't we? But I guess that's why it's called testing, and you don't see the true hand until the rallies actually start. There would be, all kinds of different mapping that was being used. But, you know, once the rally actually starts, then they go with what they know best. So, like you said, yeah, different sounds, unusual sounds. But it was great. It was exciting. And that's what we want.
Jack Bennion. Now, you're the youngest of all of us, this must be like a dawn of just a completely new world for you now. Because the reason why I say this, right, and I don't say this flippantly, Jack Bennion, we're all envious of your age and your quiff, it has to be said. We've discussed this off air before we even started recording this podcast. But we've kind of come through. I remember going to see Group B cars, and then I've seen Group A cars, and then I've seen World cars, and I've seen, obviously, the 2016 World cars. You've only kind of seen these things mostly on kind of video and stuff like that, but you're kind of there from day one on this one.
Yeah, it's nice to be sort of alive and kicking as this is kicking off, if you like. But yeah, I think, you know, this has got to be one of the most exciting periods in WRC history. I don't care how old you are or what you've seen before. You know, the speed the cars are going at, how they look. You know, Julian was talking a little bit about the sort of fins and dive planes and all that kind of stuff. All the aero that are on the cars. The liveries look great. You know, the drivers are really spectacular. And you know, what more could you ask for?
Do you know what? I'm so glad that I've got Ryan Champion and Julian Porter to ask them what a dive plane is. Because Jack's had that in his back. Jack has had that in his back pocket, ready for this podcast. So I'm going to come. Who's going to take dive plane? Who's going to give me the most definitive? Ryan, Julian, who's going to take this one?
A dive plane to me means absolutely nothing, apart from, I suspect it's one of those, a multitude of one of those things that was sticking off every part of a World Rally car, but the exact terminology of one, I can't tell you.
It's specifically the bit sticking off the front bumper on either side. So some went for one, some went for two, but it's that little bit sticking out from the front bumper.
Wow, a dive plane, there you go. Jules, one thing that I did, and I know the boys probably want to know this as well, the spectacle, did it bring out more fans? Has there been more interaction even over the course of the weekend? Have you noticed it on social media? Did you notice more fans there? Has this captured the imagination again?
I mean, the Gap Service Park, it's always been busy the years we've been there. But there did seem to be a lot of people in there. M Sport, I think they're ordering new kind of barriers for Sweden because they just couldn't cope. But they were way, way overwhelmed with the amount of media and spectators and VIPs that were descending on them. Pure and simply new cars and having the reigning world champion, I suspect. But I did hear a story come out of M Sport on Saturday night. It went a bit mad and a bit crazy when Ogier obviously took the lead Saturday night, and even more people arrived at the M Sport service. And someone was heard to ask Sebastian and Julian, is it normally like this? And they went, we've not known this before. As for people out on stages, stage 13, which was stage two, was running the night, then run again on Saturday evening when Neville had his problem. People, when we were driving, fortunately our access gets us right up to the stop line, but the furthest people, when we arrived an hour before the stage, they were having to walk 6 kilometres. That was where the end of the line was for the spectator parking, was 6Ks, and people were walking it.
Wow.
And so you had to be there very early if you didn't want to walk more than like 500 or 600 metres.
Fair play. Jack, if I can come to you on the social media aspect, obviously that's been a big thing and the kind of the big drive behind, you know, the new cars and everything else, people seeing videos. Did you see, you were on duty over the weekend, you were excellently covering via the Autosport Twitter feed and everything else. Did you notice more people getting involved?
Yeah, definitely. There was definitely a buzz of impact on Twitter and some of the social media sites, and the numbers for Autosport Live were pretty good as well. So we were quite happy with what we saw. But yeah, I think, you know, the new era has really seemed to have captured the imaginations of the fans and even some people outside of the sport. And, you know, I saw people tweeting who used to work for Motorsport News years ago and have really sort of connected with the sport again through this. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement there. And I think social media now is that place where excitement could build, isn't it, that you maybe wouldn't have had in 86 and stuff when Group B was happening. You didn't have that kind of social media aspect. So we've seen a lot of the testing, but this is the definitive action, isn't it? This is where the drivers are competing in Monte Carlo, and it's great to see it finally happening.
Right, you were like me, you were just kind of a fan sat on the side. You were trying to obviously keep up to date probably as much as what I was and everything else. Did it hook you in? And did it hook you in the story? Because this is the other thing as well. There's been a fantastic story told throughout Monte Carlo. You know, obviously with the new cars, that was kind of almost a side story. And, you know, Sebastian Ogier obviously driving for M Sport, you almost felt like everybody was rooting for him again, didn't you?
I think we all quietly wanted to see an M Sport win, didn't we? It's so long since M Sport have obviously won a rally. Putting the world champion in there immediately put some amount of expectation on their shoulders, but you know, they dealt with it brilliantly. So I think I for one, as much as I'm an Ogier fan, I don't think I've ever rooted for Sebastian Ogier quite as much as I did during the Monte Carlo rally. And it's a fantastic story that he moves to another team and he takes the win. But likewise, despite the fact I want to see M Sport win, I don't want to see Sebastian Ogier dominate this year. But hopefully, from what we've seen from Monte Carlo, that won't be the case, and we're going to see good competition, because the cars look relatively equal. And you know, even as we saw with Toyota, they came in and set good times, set good pace. Yes, okay, there was an element of attrition that got Jari Matti to second, but nonetheless, the car wasn't slow. So great to see them coming at a high level as well.
Jules, I think we all, as Rice just said there, we all secretly probably were rooting for M Sport. I was, to be honest with you. I'm a big, big fan of what Malcolm's done and everything else. What was the general consensus like from the other teams? Obviously, I remember when Volkswagen first arrived, and you know, people have spoke about this quite a bit. You know, it was like this machine almost turning up, and then we got, you know, obviously the high-end I service park and everything else. They're a fantastic spectacle and everything else. And this kind of came quite like kind of late, I suppose, for M Sport, with obviously Sebastian Ogier signing, and as you say, they didn't have the barriers and stuff like that. Was this kind of little M Sport taking on, you know, the big Toyotas? And I don't know what their service area was like this time round, but was it kind of taking on the big machines again, or was it kind of equal playing fields there?
Oh, I mean, M Sports still, they have their nice but smallish hospitality. I mean, the food's as good as anywhere, and the team are as good as anywhere. But yeah, you don't have a high-end style, two-story, three-story, depending on where they're at, situation with them. So, well, yeah, they did have a new kind of service bay, basically just because they needed a bit more space, so to speak. But it's Toyota had a fan. I actually never went into Toyota. I went into the cars were serviced, never went into the hospitality. Hyundai still lead the way. I'd say then Toyota, and then with Citroen and M Sport, they're sticking more to kind of like a traditional rally kind of thing of a truck with awnings off the side of it, so to speak, or kind of space frame stuff. So it's the more kind of normal, casual rally kind of style and that family atmosphere stuff. So, but I mean, yeah, they're all kind of trying to outdo each other, but. As I said, Hyundai had some new catering in there. They have an Italian company, and it's five-star dining in the middle of nowhere in these service parks in all of the teams. And I suspect, you know, these teams are catering potentially for 200 people on an evening, 150, 200 people on an evening, with team and media and journalists and VIPs. You go into any restaurant with like a birthday party or a wedding for 200, and we all kind of think the food's not great because it's mass-produced. Food these lot are supplying is fantastic. It is amazing, and it's all self-sufficient. So, yeah, it's quite amazing what they can produce and bring up in the service park, and it's starting to look a real kind of proper setup, so to speak.
I've got to say, because we feel like we need to get the spectacle a little bit, even in the service park again. You know, we always talk about. And I'm going to come to this. There's a rationale behind where I'm going with this. Is that I've worked quite a lot behind the scenes in F1 as well, and obviously people always compare it to what's going on. And what I was hoping that with the 2017 cars coming in, the manufacturers coming in, that you know the casual fan or people being taken. Now, obviously there was tales of obviously the main guy from Ford Performance coming over, who obviously. I did a nice piece, I think, Jules, with you guys, didn't he? At the end of the rally, wanting Ford to perhaps support Malcolm a little bit more. Have you got any more on that?
No, I don't have any more on that. Apart from let's hope that he's true to his word that he put out on live TV and things like that. I mean, do we remember? We have to go back. Was it 4 years when M Sport had their very very big fancy new kind of hospitality mega plaza thing in the service park, two-story thing, which was quite amazing, which I think now kind of runs between their Bentley and their Ford, their Bentley GT3 program, their Ford World Sports Car program. And I don't know whether we'll go back to that. I'm not really sure whether we'll go back to that kind of era. It depends how many sponsors come on board. I was told there was two sponsors from the signing of Ogier. Basically, two companies approached them, and they just couldn't get the deals finalized in time for Monty. So hopefully, all I was told is the car might have significantly more stickers on by the time we get to Sweden. I was told.
I love that. That's old school, isn't it? More stickers on before Sweden. Jack, if I can bring you in at this point, and as I say, where I'm going with this is that I want the WRC to be a spectacle again. I want it to drag people in, because the cars are going to do their job. I think that's undoubtedly, but it's got to be the whole package, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. You know, it's that element of sort of being the top level, isn't it? You know, you want to turn up in service park and see all these amazing things. But yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, it doesn't, when you think about it, it doesn't really affect your general spectator, does it? A hospitality unit, you know, because they're not, you know, your general spectator isn't going to be in there at any point. So in terms of an actual experience, you know, actually being in there, it's not, you know, it's not going to give them anything, but going into the service park and seeing those big buildings really gives you a sense of occasion, doesn't it? And I guess that's kind of what you're getting at, and that's what, you know, that's what all top sports are aiming at, is to give fans that element of occasion.
And not, and that's exactly where I'm going, is that with all these teams coming back in, you know, I've took people on events, and I'm sure you have, Rye, as well, where, you know, I know you've done some of the hospitality side, as have I, and, you know, to get people in, sometimes you take them into a service park, and I've had this as well, where they've kind of almost turned their nose up because they used to go into, you know, the football, or they used to go into even like touring cars and things like that. I just want the WRC to, every aspect of it now needs to almost be like the cars, almost be like on steroids again.
Yeah, it's about polishing the whole package, isn't it? As you said, it's got to be a whole package, and it's about polishing the whole thing now, and you know, making it appeal to the mass market, helping us compete against more mainstream sports, because we've talked about it at length before. We know that in terms of you know, the casual fan, if you like, we dropped off the radar, and I still get questions about, oh, what's going on in rallying now? We don't see it on TV as much as we used to, and we know that it has suffered you know, against a whole number of sports, particularly in the UK. So we've got the cars, you know, we're hopefully getting British drivers back at the front of it, and like you say, it's just about building everything up. The TV side's coming back again, you know, social media's coming, so it's improving in all areas, and you know, let's hope that does continue. And like you said, it's, if you're bringing in new sponsors to the sport, you're taking a sponsor into the service park for the first time, you want them to be impressed. The only slight caveat to that, I guess, is if we want to change the character of events, which has been rumoured, you know, we want to go back to some slightly longer events, then that doesn't fit very well with a central service area with even bigger hospitality in it. So you know, that's got to be in the mind of some people as well, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Jules, sorry.
I was just going to add to that. As Ryan said, I think if you're a sponsor going in, all of these teams, or a VIP, all of these teams are well adapted and they are looked after. As Jack was saying, if you were a casual fan, you go to Raleigh Finland Service Park, and there's something for the kids to do, there's something for the dads to do, the mums to do, all ages of kids. And it's become, Raleigh Sweden's the same, Raleigh France is the same, there's got to be something, not just about the cars. Monte Carlo does struggle with spacing, cap, and things like that. But it's got to be, it's basically you're going out for the day, so to speak, and you've got to, like, occupy your children, your kids and everything. And if you're not fortunate enough to be inside the circle and you're on the outside looking in, there's got to be plenty to do. And some rallies get that really right. They do. Some rallies maybe need a little bit of learning. But there needs to be more stalls in the service park. But the fees that some of these rallies are charging to be in the service park is quite astronomical. And that's why I suspect some service parks are quite empty.
Yeah, I think you're probably hitting the nail on the head there. But again, it's just as I say, I want the whole package to be polished. And that's kind of where I was going with that. But anyway, listen, everybody wants to talk about what's going on actually on the stages as well, which is why I wanted Julesy with us. Jules, were you at the end of the first stage, the first completed stage? Did you see the guys at the end of the first completed stage, or were you on TV duty at that point?
I was on television duty. I was in with John Desbrick reporting from that stage. Marla was at the end of the stage. But was he about 9 or 10 seconds quicker over the stage? Was OJ this year to last year or something? So it wasn't a huge amount. When we hear the testing figures of 1 second per kilometre. But I would say, if you want to do a little review of the rally, I think it might be easier to do it team by team rather than going off on tangents. You do it team by team, you can condense it a little bit easier and we can all have our thoughts on it. That's probably the easiest way of...
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea. We'll do it in reverse order because we've already spoke about M Sport. If we can talk about Citroën first and foremost, Jules, a bit of a mixed bag, and the hero for them was expected to be the hero, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, Craig had a great run. Craig and Scott, brilliant run. Just did what they had to do, really, which was keep it on the road and not making the mistakes, which was the perfect job for them. Yeah, Chris and Stefan, I mean, yes, I was told, I can't remember who told me now. I cannot remember who told me, but it was reported Thursday night that Stefan had a mechanical issue and that's why it stopped. I was then told, yeah, he had a clutch failure because he'd been stuck in a ditch and was trying to get it out of the ditch and the clutch gave up. So that was why I was then late out of service. So not great for him. Then, obviously, Chris had his drama in stage four when he ran wide, hit the thing, and then the road accident on the Saturday night, and then there was the spark plug issue. But I think more alarming for Citroën is the handling on the bumpy roads. I noticed at the end of stage six, the first stage in the afternoon loop on Friday, Lefebvre's front splitter was smashed and broken and cut. And my question was, had he been off? He goes, no, why? I said, well, the front of the car, the aero's all starting to fall to pieces. He goes, the car's too low. He says, even under braking, when I'm hitting the brakes, I'm bottoming out. And I said, well, do you need to ride it up on the road section? He says, no, we're fully high. This is as high as this car goes on tarmac. And it was crashing out and the braking, hitting everything, planing along every cut. So, they didn't seem too happy about that. Whether that's a problem that will raise its head again later on tarmac, I'm not sure. I suspect gravel's very different, but tarmac seemed to have been an issue. But then the ignition spark plug issue. They, for a team that we thought was so well prepared, there was a few bits of head scratching, I think, going on there now.
Right. Did you see Chris's off first and foremost?
Yeah, I mean
that would. Sorry, I'll tell you. Go on, Ryan.
I was just going to say, I saw it. He ran wide and he was punished badly for it. I mean, we'll talk about Thierry Neuville in a few minutes, but Chris ran wide in a fast place and it just happened to be a very solid bank in there. And it's typical meek luck, really, isn't it? He could have got away with it, but he didn't. And unfortunately, that ruined his weekend before the subsequent issues he then had. I mean, it was a really unfortunate week for him. Funnily enough, I watched a lot of the rally, a lot of the results with Terry Kirby, who I was working with, and we said it was a very McRae-esque Monte Carlo rally for Chris Meek, unfortunately. Just one thing after another, which always seemed to used to happen to Colin McRae. You know, Monte Carlo is about either keeping out of trouble or at least having a little bit of luck, and Chris Meek had neither.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Jack, if I can bring you in, you guys have got a really nice piece with regards to Craig Green's performance. I assume David Evans has already had a chat with him.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a rundown over the rally and look at how Craig got on. I think, you know, it's important to temper Craig's performance a little bit against the fact that we didn't have any other WRC cars on the event, so knowing how quick Craig really was is a little bit difficult given that the fact that he didn't have any competition. But you know, I don't really think you can deny, you know, that he put in a really good performance over the weekend, and the finishing position was great. I think the one thing I picked up from Chris's performance was on the off, I think there's about probably 400 metres before the corner, Paul Nagel shouting at him, telling him to you know, watch this Chris, and he, you know, that's when he goes off. So Paul Nagel clearly knew they were going off quite a bit before they actually did. So I don't know if that was a pace note issue or something that had gone wrong there. I'm not entirely sure, but I think the problem with the Citroën performance over the weekend was sort of consistency, because you know, we saw Chris running second early on and we saw Stefan setting top two times on the last day. You know, the pace in the car was there, but as Julian said, you know, they had a real issue with the ride height, and when the car was running a little bit lower down, it was taking bits of the bodywork off and stuff like that, so they couldn't really find a balance in the suspension and the ride height and all that kind of stuff with getting the car to perform well on the bumpy asphalt, as Julian said. So that's going to be an issue moving forward on the other tarmac round.
Absolutely.
And if you look at Torini, the Torini, Jack, obviously that was when Lefebvre won the stage first time through, the smoothest, cleanest stage on the rally, and the pace was bang on there, because maybe Lefebvre's still learning a little bit in these cars. So it's fast, it's a fast car, they've just got to iron out a few problems.
Does that come from testing, Jules? Is that a testing thing, or is that driver feedback? We know they've done a lot of test kilometres. They've, as you said right at the top there, they felt very, very strong with the work that they've done. So for them to be kind of caught out on the Monty is a bit of a head scratcher, really, isn't it?
It is a little bit. You would have thought they'd have tested virtually everywhere. You would have. Was this year's route a bit more bumpier than what we've had before? not really sure. There's a huge proportion of it was new. Some of it was old. But as I said, on the Torini, I drove that stage on the morning. It was clean. It was smooth. It was like a racetrack. And Stefan, granted, Poche wasn't really pushing. Tanaka was on two cylinders. Craig was in his 16 car. Neuville was easing himself in for power stage points. But Sordo was on the pace. And when we get to Hyundai, we'll talk about how quick they were. Sordo was on the pace and flying on that morning, and Lefebvre beat him. So the car is quick. It is very quick, that Citroën, and it's totally different in every other concept, every other car, as in how they have gone with aero and cooling. It looks like nothing else in the cooling department. Everything else has got these kind of veins up the back of wheel arches and things like that. They haven't gone that way. So there's a lot of kind of work gone into it. Touring car styles work, maybe, if we want to go down that kind of way. You know what I mean? It's their World Touring Car Championship stuff, maybe coming into their design, and maybe just having it the ride out, maybe just a bit low on that event.
Okay. Well, you've just mentioned Danny Sordo. We will jump over now to Hyundai. Obviously, two finishes for those guys. Danny Sordo. We're back to, you've just mentioned Danny, obviously, there. Are we back to, you know, it's only the first event, so I daren't say this, but tarmac and these types of events was always where Danny came into his own, wasn't it, Jules?
It was, yeah. And he just didn't get on with the conditions. God, what was it he said? Friday, he said, I just don't have any grip, it's inconsistent, I've got no confidence. Saturday morning, my question to him was, Danny, a little bit more consistent. You had longer stretches of tarmac, then snow, and then longer stretches of tarmac. And he went, I have no confidence. I can't drive in these conditions. Now, for any competitive driver, you don't go admitting that anywhere. Not when your teammate's leading by over a minute and you're struggling around behind a 2016 spec car. It was a tough weekend for him. He started to get the feeling back on Saturday, but then a power steering failure, flat in sixth gear, when he basically was trying to take a flat out right-hander, and the power steering failed mid-corner, and that just kind of hit his confidence big time.
Right, are we back in the realms of, I feel like we should get Trevor Agnew on for a second now, but are we back in the realms of he's talked himself out of that one before he's even gone into it?
The key word in what Julian said is confidence, and once a driver's confidence has gone, it's difficult to rebuild it, especially on a rally like that where the surface is continually changing. And you know, clearly in testing he must have got to a stage where he did feel comfortable in the car, but maybe he was testing completely on snow or completely on tarmac, but it seems in the mixed surface stages, you know, it really did upset him. And yes, Sordo's always gone well on tarmac, but you know, those, as I just said, those mixed conditions need confidence, and he just clearly didn't have confidence because he was hemorrhaging time. And you know, he'll probably be glad that Monty's behind him, because it is the only rally that does have those sort of mixed stages with such a compromise in terms of setup.
Now, I saved the rally leader for probably just over half the event for Jack Benyon, because Jack Benyon put them on the table last week. Jack Benyon told us not only was he going to win Rally Monte Carlo, he was also going to be 2017 WRC champion. Now, Jack Benyon, where did it all go wrong?
I still maintain that I think Thierry Neuville was the best driver of the weekend, not because I bet beforehand that he was going to win the event, but I genuinely think he was the best driver of the weekend. And I think two things to add to that. The first thing is, if you watch the onboard of the crash, it's the smallest of mistakes. You know, the back end's just a tiny little bit out, and there's a sort of post sticking out of the right hand side. And you know, I really think that was very, very harsh to rule him out of the rally on that. And he'd driven so well up until that point. We talked about how far Sordo was off the pace, and you know, in the same car, Nerva was absolutely fantastic. The other thing to add was, I think if you side to side any of OJ's onboards and Nerva's onboards from before the crash for any stage on WRC Plus, you'll see how many mistakes OJ was making. And I think that was really uncharacteristic. Another theme of the weekend that's not really been talked about very much, because obviously he won the rally, but if you watch some of OJ's onboards, you know, and he was talking about it at the stage end as well, I'm sure Julian will be able to fill us in a little bit more about what he was saying, but lots of stage ends from OJ coming to the end saying, you know, I've dropped it in a bank here, I've clipped this here, but I've had a bit of luck. And even he said Nerville's driven so fantastically before he'd gone out as well. So, you know, I really think the best driver of the weekend has not been talked about very much, in the sense that Nerville went out and now he's not really being mentioned.
Jules, would you have our young Quiffhead co-presenters point on that? Would you agree?
Yeah, Nerville was supreme. No one got near him. He was leading by 55 seconds or something. And I have the benefit of going into WRC TV and watching that moment that he had. And it was basically, there was a drain underneath the road. And you know how they concrete the drain? And it's just a small bit of concrete on the road edge. And that's basically what he ran into and dropped off the edge of. And it was such a small little error. It wasn't his gravel nuts, which I think really annoyed him even more than anything. He had been warned about the gravel on the inside of the corner, which made him slide. But Nerville, I have not seen Thierry Nerville as relaxed, as happy, confident, maybe if you want to put it, but definitely relaxed and kind of at one with himself since his M Sport Fiesta days. He just was pleasant, polite, kind of like, yeah, this is the car for me. We're on our way here. And, you know, he would have won that rally by a minute if it hadn't been. But that's what rallying is all about. And that's the Ogier look, so to speak, against the Nerville look.
I guess we're back to confidence as well, aren't we, boys? We've just been talking about Danny Sordo having no confidence. And here we are now with a driver that has got supreme confidence in pretty much the same car. I'll come to you, Ryan, on this one very, very quickly before we move on. How different do you think the setups that somebody like Thierry Nerville would have over Danny Sordo? Do you think the cars will be massively apart on the first event with regards to setup?
No, I wouldn't expect so. You know, at the end of the day, you set the car up to go as fast as it will go, and then within that, then obviously you've got to suit it to driver preference. But ultimately, there will be a setup that makes that car work the best. So they will have probably their own slightly different damper settings. One might be softer, one might be slightly stiffer, but fundamentally you'd expect the car to be quite similar. But as we said, very, very different in confidence. And just picking up on what Jack said there, I think Jack's absolutely right. I saw some criticism of Nerville in the press saying, oh, well, if you go flat out, then that's what happens, you'll crash. But as Jack said, Ogier was off the road all the time. In fact, Ogier probably made more mistakes than Nerville. It was just Nerville was punished for his. So really bad luck, fantastic performance. And, you know, let's hope that this is the Thierry Nerville we're going to carry on seeing for the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Now we move on. We've talked about confidence.
Oh, just hang on, sorry. Tony. Well, we'll just add one thing to that. I think Ryan's right. You know, Nerville was supreme. Stage 12 particularly, he was the only top leading driver to stay on winter tyres for stage 12, where the rest crossed with winters and slicks. And he dropped 20 seconds in there. He dropped 15 on another stage because he could and he had the time. So, you know, he dropped over half a minute just by being careful because he was in such an advantageous position. He had that rally in his pocket and was just very unlucky.
Okay. Now we talk about confidence. We've just been talking about confidence. One man whose confidence we've questioned, bless him, probably for the last 6 to 12 months is Jari Matti Latvala. So we'll come to Toyota. Have we got a new Jari back? Jules, did you encounter him? How was he? Does he seem fresh?
Yeah, he was very happy. He was, again, self-critical at stage end. Oh, I made a mistake with the tyres. I overused them. Or he spun a couple of times in one stage and was disappointed with himself. But I have to say, the Toyota is just bonkers. It's just crazy. You look at it from the front and there's bits sticking off it all over the place. The mirrors, they are so nice. They're such a nice touch. They're like the Citroen door handles. Then you go to the back of the Toyota and it's just kind of like, yeah, right, okay. Who even thought of that? And it's just a bonkers looking thing, but it, in kind of some ways it's very nice. Very spacious inside. There's literally nothing inside that car when they open the door on it. And it did the job. I mean, if it wasn't for Hannon making that mistake when he ran wide, and why he didn't pull the handbrake on. I've watched that on board so many times. I'm thinking, just pull the handbrake on and hit the tree sideways. Don't hit it on the front end. hit it with the side of the car. I couldn't understand why they never tried to spin the car and just headed straight in. But anyway, I mean, that was one of those things. But yeah, Latvala did. I had a situation with Yari Matti on Thursday in Monaco. We had to do some interviews with him. I went to get him. He was really stressed. And he goes, Julian, I could just do without doing it. So I said, well, you can't, Yari. It's in the deal. You've got to do it. And he goes, I haven't stopped since I got up this morning at 8 o'clock. He says, interviews, interviews, interviews. And we went into the Hotel de Paris, and Hannanen was in the interview room. And we just sat on the stairs leading up the spiral staircase. And he just basically sat there and went, 5 minutes on my own. That's all I need. I've just got to finish this rally. That's all I've got to do. Get all of this out of my brain, all of this clutter. I've just got to get through tonight. I've just got to finish the rally. He says, if I finish the rally with no problems, I think I can be on the podium. And I looked at him and went, okay, right? You think the car's that good? Because it's not bad. It's not bad. He said, it doesn't look so great, does it, in testing? He said, it's not bad. And, you know, he was quietly confident that a good, clean run, which is what he had, would see him on the podium, and it's what he got. And I think the car's under-geared. Virtually every fast shot you hear or see on internet or on TV, it's on the limiter. It's, you know, so whether they're running a completely different gear ratio or whether they can adjust that, I'm not sure. But it actually doesn't seem as bad as what we all thought it could have been in testing.
Now, you've just said something there, Jules, which is something I think Rai spoke about, obviously leading up to this. I think you spoke about it, Jack spoke about it. I didn't because I don't know enough. But you just said, why didn't you or Hannanen pull the handbrake? Are we going to get into the realms? I'll come to you first, Ryan. I'm going to come to you, Jack, briefly, where people are now and they're going to have to start thinking about looking after what did Jack call it before? A dive plane? You're going to start looking after your dive planes now? You're going to pull your handbrake? You've got to protect your dive planes?
It's in that situation, you know, like Julian was talking about. I mean, I think your natural instinct has to take over of what's the best way either to A, try and get around the corner, or B, to do as little damage as possible. And, you know, I think to actually think differently in the heat of the moment is quite difficult. But having said that, for sure, I'm sure when we get to the rougher gravel rallies, then there will be, there probably has to be a little bit more thought go into what lines you might take, where you might cut, because the suspension on these cars is fantastic. You know, they can pretty much drive over anything within reason, but there is a situation where you might do damage to your aero this year. So I don't think it will cause drivers to do things differently in the heat of the moment, but they may look at some of the bigger cuts later on in the year and yeah, think twice about them just for damage to the car.
Jack, were you surprised by the performance of both the Toyota drivers?
Yeah, to a certain extent. You know, we saw Juho very quick on the first couple of days, and you know, he was unlucky with the incident with the tree. It was such a, you know, I understand what Julian's saying about pulling the handbrake, but you know, the car's completely out of control when you watch the onboard. He's got no sort of hope, really. I don't think of saving anything at that point, but yeah, maybe, you know, if he'd have pulled the handbrake, he might have saved he might have hit the side of the car rather than the front and been able to stay in it. But yeah, both very impressive. And I think I've been a bit harsh on Yari Matti in the past and really stuck the boot in when he's not been as quick as OJ in the VW. But you know, when you look at that event, there was a lot of variables which Yari typically doesn't deal with very well. He likes everything has to be in the sweet spot for Yari to perform at his best of his ability. And I think you can agree that not very much was in the sweet spot in Monte. Difficult conditions, lots of variables with a new car. You know, even new processes like learning, you know, Nerville had problems switching his car on because he'd not done it that many times. And, you know, things like that can happen with these new cars. I think the car had diff issues. There were, you know, he had a lot of moments in hairpins. So a lot of things going wrong for Yari. And yeah, you know, he stuck it on the podium in Monte. And, you know, for me, that's one of his best performances I've ever seen him have, to be honest. You know, when you sum all those things up and add all those things together, would Yari have been on the podium in the VW there with all those things going on? I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, I think that was a fantastic performance from him. I really do.
Really good point. Really good point. Which brings us, last but not least, we have spoke about them at the top, Jules, but I'd like to talk about all the M Sport drivers, to be honest with you. Obviously, three drivers, three different liveries. Elvin Evans, obviously, with Tanak and Sebastian Ogier. Where do we start?
Well, let's go 3-2-1. I mean, Evans, he probably wanted to get on the first plane home on Friday lunchtime, because Friday morning was bad. disastrous. Caught and passed by Hannanen, I think it was, in stage three. He'd been in a ditch, he'd been in the same ditch as obviously Ogier, but not as long. And then he'd made another mistake and he just had no grip. He just had no grip and no confidence. Dropping 2.5 minutes on a stage with only 20 seconds of it being offs is a bit catastrophic at that level, really. And not since probably Richard Burns went past Didier Auriol in the fog of Radnor have we seen one World Rally driver overtaking another without any major problems. It was quite bad for him. And then the road got better and better on Saturday. 3 stage wins out of 5 and very clean. They were very good stages. Evans, I'd say I was very surprised by it. The mixture of tyres, winters with races on, and it just kind of, there was some proper commitment when you watch those onboards. And he did an amazing job. He really did. So fair play. And we know that they're kind of DMAC are strong in places like Finland, places like Poland, places like GB. If this car's as good as we all think it is, you know, DMAC might get that first win.
That's a big call. Now, Julian's just mentioned that we are into tyres. Obviously, DMAC are the only other option now to Michelin. They didn't work on Friday, but something happened. Something happened. Elvin got his confidence. Obviously, conditions changed. It wasn't the ice the way it had been on the Friday, and he drove with an attitude which comes from a man, I guess, who's just become he was a British Rally champion last year, and that we I think we've all said there's a bit of an edge to him now.
Well, they certainly worked around the problems very well, didn't they? Because, conditions changed slightly, but there was still plenty of ice and snow around during the rest of the rally. And, they did find a combination that worked well. And you have to say all credit to Elvin for those three fastest times. And, it just goes to show that we do need a tyre war in the sport. Wouldn't it be great to see more teams on different tyres? You know, we heard it not that long ago, the FIA were talking about a single tyre again. But for me, it's one of those things that can really spice up a rally, that somebody's on a faster tyre than somebody else, and it's a great unknown. So I think it would be great if we saw a bit more of a mix between the teams. But in all credit to Elvin, Dan back in on the notes for the first time in a year or so, and he proved at the top level that he can set not just the odd fastest time, but consistently set fastest time. So I think when he looks back on Monte Carlo, yes, okay, the first day might have been a disaster, but I think he'll definitely take a lot of heart from that and a lot of confidence going forward, because he's proved he can set the times.
Jack, we'll come to you. You've been a massive supporter of Elvin in your column over the last few months, obviously covering the British Rally Championship. What did you make of the performance?
I think everything that needs to be said is in David Evans' column in MN this week. But I think you both scratched on it a little bit there. Whatever you think of Elvin's performance over any point of the weekend, I think we would have seen a different Elvin a couple of years ago. The way he bounced back after that struggle on Friday and put those fastest times in is something that you can't really teach. It's one of those attitude things that you need to have. He might have withdrawn and gone within himself, back in 2014 or 2015 when he was with the M Sport team then. But I think whether it's the year out in the British Championship or the year in WRC2, or whether he's working on something himself, I'm not sure. But there was a different attitude from Elvin, which was really the most impressive part of that for me.
Couldn't agree more. Brings me to one of my heroes of the rally, Jules, which is Oi Tanak. And he was one of my heroes just purely by the way he went through the flying finish board and anything. But it was just a proper, that's how you go over a flying finish. But you just feel like, we've spoke about luck with different drivers throughout this review of the events and everything else. But what's that boy got to do?
Yeah, but I mean, he would probably, realistically, if you'd said to him, right, where do you think you can finish? He'd have said, right, top five. I would think I thought a top five was a good result for him on Monte. The guy that won the stage three, I mean, he would never probably have thought that. You always kind of got to believe in yourself, but realistically, he had a great 2 days. Well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 3 days, if you want to call it that. Great 3 days. And then, yeah, it was a sense. Well, he told me it was a sensor. when he came out to Torini, I wasn't doing the stage and interviews, but I jumped out of the vehicle I was in watching the footage and stopped him on the road section. And I kind of said, what is it? What's wrong? Because we'd been able to watch the helicopter footage of him working on the car between the two stages, from the first and the second stage. And I didn't know whether like the multi-belt had come off or something and was causing it to overheat, which had been giving it its misfire. And he was like, no. He said, it's a sensor, but I just don't know which one. Obviously, there's quite a few of those kind of sensors on that car. And he did a great job. And you know, halfway through Torini, once he'd gone over the top of Torini, basically, he was going to be down to fifth if he maintained the same time loss for the second half of the stage. And he actually clawed some back. And it was, it's on the downhill, you make it up, but he only did only have half an engine working. It was a great performance, really was. And as we know, all M Sport drivers won the stage. So it's a good car. And give Tanaka a car that he doesn't have to overdrive. Because I think when we've seen before in anything he's driven, he's had to overdrive it. And basically, it was only a matter of time before he hit something pretty hard. You give him a car that he doesn't have to overdrive, and it all starts to come naturally. He only has to drive it 99% of the time. He again, like Evans and D-Mac, they can have their first win. I can see Tanak winning one as well.
I think so too. Right. I must admit, this is kind of, I've said it, I called it the second bite of the cherry for Hoyt. I listened really with great interest to the podcast that Bex did for WRC, where he was saying that Hoyt and Sebastian Ogier are already getting competitive. Even at dinner, they were competitive when they had the first team meeting together and things like that. Do you think Hoyt fancies it? I don't think he fancies being that submissive number two, does he?
Not at all. We know that Tanak has shown fantastic pace. He's just never maybe shown the consistency. But the one thing that he's got several things in his favour this year, but the one thing that he's got in his favour that will help him learn massively is his teammate to the 4-times world champion. He's teammate to the man who's been and done it all. He's got access to his setup, access to his data, and he can see what works for Ogier, and that will be a massive boost to Tanak, because like we said, if there's been a weak area in his arsenal, if you like, it's been consistency. He drove very consistently in Monte Carlo, and now he's got the most consistent teammate in the world, so it will only do him good this year.
Jack, if I can come to you with regards to Hoyt, I watched the coverage with my ever-loving other half, and when Hoyt was showing emotion and things like that, they're the types of things that she was like, oh, you know, I hope he gets sorted and stuff like that. I think we all did, but he does appeal to people. When you guys are covering stuff like this, and I, this is a serious question again, does it help you write a story, the fact that you've got somebody caring and showing those emotions?
It does help with most drivers, but the one thing I would say about Hoyt is he can be quite quiet, and the way he shows his character is being quite often being quite submissive or dramatic. So you know, he'll come to the stop line and he'll give you a two-word answer, and then you know, it'll be, oh, I've got to go, which is quite frantic and makes a good television, but doesn't really make for good quotes. So I wouldn't particularly pick out Hoyt as a person who, you know, is you know, like, you know, someone we'd go to for that kind of thing. But for the TV, he's great, isn't he? And I think he really helps bring people into the sport. And he's one of those stereotypical Finns with that kind of attitude, isn't he? You know, we've seen him, so many of them in rally, and they are really entertaining.
Apart from he's Estonian.
Well, you know what I meant.
I think you meant, Jack, but we did have to put it straight.
I was comparing him to those. He's got that Finnish kind of attitude. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I think you also have to be quite careful when you start comparing Finns with Estonians. You know, I think
most definitely. Having worked with some Estonians in my past, trust me, Jack.
It's a bit like comparing the English with anybody who border around us.
Okay, yeah. Right. I tell you, I got a little story I did hear on Sunday. Now I haven't actually got in touch with to confirm it. But the final road section, it was very, very downhill, lots of mountain road, lots of hairpins. And because the car had been running off for two cylinders for so long, it was running out of fuel. Basically, they had to turn the engine off on anything that was downhill. so that he had enough fuel in the car to get into Monaco. Now, I haven't had that confirmed by Arthur from the team, but I did get it from quite a good source that he had to basically coast down to Monaco, so to speak.
It wouldn't surprise me. In fact, later on in the podcast, by the way, we are going to have a friend of the show, Grizzly Rich Milner, who was in that shot as Malcolm was seeing the results. So we'll ask Rich about that a little bit later on. Now, we spoke about Ogier at the top of the programme. We've been wax lyrical about him. Julesy, is he a happier bunny?
I don't know whether he's happier. As Ryan said earlier on, he was in and out of a few ditches over the weekend, and I mean, his moment live on TV on stage 12 when he went into the field, he knew that he was bordering a field, so he could just try and carry that extra speed through. And it's things like that that makes a difference. You know, he knows where he's got to be careful, and he knows where he can take a bit of a risk, a bit of a gamble, and he's got space to get away with it. And I got a phone call from RedBull.com during the week, right, who's going to win the rally? Sebastian Ogier. Why? Because he can read the rally so well. You know, he's something he's starting to learn. But he knows Monty like that. But I feel we'll see this year Sebastian Ogier not be as greedy as having to win like every single stage. He's got four world titles. Yeah, he wants five, he wants six. But I feel now that winning a championship in a different car is something Loeb never achieved. And he's always been compared to Loeb. So I think for him this year, the championship is more than anything. Even though he wants to win everything, I just think he manages everything so much better. He's told me he just can't believe how passionate M Sport are at building rally cars and wanting to win. I think it's something... obviously, Citroën are passionate, Volkswagen are passionate, but these guys were in on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve and things like that to get these cars wrapped up. And that has really struck a chord with Ogier of how much they want to win. He had a few little demands and things like that with Malcolm. We did an interview with Malcolm before the event, and he said it was tricky at times. There was a few little moments that they had to get along with to sort it all out. But, you know, you what do they all say? You get what you pay for, don't you?
I don't think I could have put it better myself. You do, and certainly do get what you pay for in this world, and definitely in the world of rallying anyway. But guys, thank you all for contributing to a bit of a, I suppose, Rally Monte Carlo podcast special. It had to be, didn't it? It was a special moment. And we thought it was good to get everybody's views and thoughts on that. We will be back to our kind of normal format. We'll even have any other business and everything but next week. But yes, I wanted to do this program a bit like this and get Julesy on as well. But thanks to Julian Porter for coming on. Thank you for your thoughts. And also thanks, Jack, and thanks, Ryan. As I say, we'll be back to our normal format. But before we go, as I say, I wanted to just capture that moment, which if you watch the WRC Plus, if you watch Red Bull TV, or certainly any of the Hilux packages as well, there was that split screen between Malcolm Wilson being in the office back in the service park, watching the splits coming in and watching WRC Plus footage as well. And the man sat alongside him was Rich Milner. Of course, Rich has been on the show many, many times, and I really, really wanted to just hear from Rich really what that moment was like to see that first win for probably, what, 4.5 years, I think it was, Rally GB 2012, something like that. So as I say, I wanted to catch Rich. So after this break, we're going to come back with Rich Milner.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Absolute Rally. As I say, for the final section, I wanted to get friend of the show. We called him Grizzly. I don't think we can now. I think that would be deemed to be disrespectful, because Rich Milner, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thanks for having me back. And you after the potential result that we had on Saturday night for a win, I had a shave just for Sunday, just in case.
The reason why I wanted to grab you, Rich, is because, like many, many rally fans who unfortunately couldn't be at Monte Carlo, because we watched the excellent coverage on the likes of WC Plus and Red Bull TV and all these other bits and pieces now that we can see. Now, there was the split screen of Malcolm at Mission Control at HQ at the service park watching the coverage of, I assume the same coverage as we were watching, and you were there, sat alongside him.
Yes, indeed, we were.
Now, there was a little bit to say probably in that office, even though you had a first. Now, I'm going to ask you, was there more tension on Oik getting to the finish or actually Sebastien Ogier getting over the line and getting that first win for 4.5 years?
I think there was tension everywhere. And I think the first bit of tension was finally overcome when Oik did cross the finish line, because it was a bit of an interesting one. I knew anyway that if he was going to do it, he would manage it in that last section, because the weather was getting worse and worse. And you know, Danny didn't have probably the best weekend he would see it as, but on the last day he was quick. But it was going to be, I said to Malcolm, this car's either coming home or he's going off the road. And luckily in that last section, you can see how he went around the last corner, that he brought it home, but in tremendous speed and style. So to get that third place was a massive relief, because obviously Seb was still in the stage, so to know we at least had a podium with the first car was brilliant. But then as soon as that was done and out of the way, the tension was back again, waiting for the final car to clear the stage, because our bad luck in the last couple of years was coming incredibly close to winning and then not achieving it at the last minute. You never know quite what's going to happen. And then with what happened with Oik in the morning, you know, we were just like, please let this thing end.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, having Seb in the car, does that bring an added, aside from obviously his history, he's a 4-time world champion and everything else, but does that bring, well, Seb, one thing that has always been blessed, along with his talent, he's always had that little bit of luck as well, which, and by his own admission, he acknowledged that on Monte Carlo. Were you thinking, at least we've got Seb in the car?
I think it's easy to think that, but you know, he's only human at the end of the day, and he did only have 2 days of testing in the car really before we went to the rally. So everything was new to him as well. He made it relatively clear through the weekend that the pace Thierry was going at, we weren't in the position to be pushing that hard, and the conditions in Monte this weekend were proper Monte conditions. And he, you know, he's won the event a number of times and knows to be very clever and use his experience to push to a certain level and keep the pressure on, but not necessarily push to the edge every time, because you see what happened to Thierry, and then Seb was in a perfect place to take over and ended up winning the rally very comfortably, time-wise. But it's great to have him in the team. You know that he's a very sensible set of hands, and if anyone can do it, he can. But at the same time, if you take away all his problem, you know, he was really impressive as well. So we're all a little bit more relaxed that we've got two very fast guys in the car. But, you know, we've unfortunately in some ways set the bar rather high now for the rest of the season. We couldn't really get much higher apart from the 1-2 would have been probably the next step up. But, you know, we're going to have to keep repeating this, we hope. So the hard work really is almost starting again now and probably going to get even harder. So there's not much time off, put it that way.
Well, I think to be fair, I think you look at Elvin's times on day three alone. You had, you know, three faster times out of five as well. That must give another, you know, I suppose taking, this sounds quite harsh, I suppose, but if you take Seb out of the whole thing and you know, the event almost, and you say, well, you know, probably last year that would have been deemed as a success to have, you know, someone in a Fiesta World Rally car so dominant. But now, almost because the bars, as you say correctly, say you've just said, has been set so high, that's almost been lost, hasn't it? You know, the drive that Elvin put in, I think, on day three was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obvious for everyone to see on the first day, he really did struggle. The tyres just weren't quite working as he'd hoped on the ice, and for that first real day, there was a lot of it. As the weekend went on, there was a couple more cleaner stages, and on the Sunday, obviously, there was a lot more cleaner stages in the morning anyway, and his times were absolutely unbelievable. Fastest, just on similar conditioned roads that everyone was on, was great to see, you know, and it proved again, the car is obviously fast. Elvin's up for the challenge as well. And, you know, we did a number of firsts on the weekend. We kept our winning streak by winning again with a new category of car in WRC, which we did with Fiesta WRC, and we did with Super 2000 as well. When we brought that out, we won on his first event. So that was great. But then the other thing we did is every one of our drivers got a fastest time over the weekend, which no other manufacturer did as well. So, you know, what we've achieved, and what the engineers and the guys in the workshop have achieved with this incredible late nights and the amount of effort and work that's going in. I mean, these cars were finished literally minutes before the transporter left. We're all just really, really happy with what we've managed to pull off.
So the plan now, obviously, all the guys are coming back. I know some of the guys are working hard already to get the long haul kit ready, but the guys who are working for Sweden, what's going on now for Sweden?
So the cars came back this morning, literally dropped off at the gate. We had a nice team photograph because unfortunately not everybody could be on the podium. As much as we'd like to have all 200 people out there, it doesn't really practical. Moving people around doesn't really work, unfortunately. So, you know, we're trying to share it with let everybody in the team know that it doesn't matter if you're sweeping the floor, making the tea, or doing the engineering and most complicated aspects of the car. Everyone's involved. You know, everyone's needed to get it working and get it winning. So, it was the first thing was to make sure important that everyone realizes they're a part of the team. And then they went straight back into the workshop and been stripped already. So we've only really got until middle of next week, towards the end of next week, middle to end of next week before they're off again. With any new cars, a few teething problems and a few things we need to change and develop. So again, there's only 3 or 4 days before we have to start making parts or changing parts if there's anything that we need to do there as well. So it's pretty much non-stop. And will be really for the first few months. Like you mentioned, the long haul containers, they leave in the next couple of weeks as well to go out to Mexico. So there's a complete another set of kit and spares that need to be loaded into them as well. So there's all sorts going on here.
It is exciting. It is exciting. Now, obviously, you've worked with Oik before. You've worked with Elvin as well before. How's it been working with Seb? I know it's only one event in. Was he what you expected or what?
I mean, it's very easy to see why he's a 4-time world champion. He's very committed, he's very focused and knows what he wants and how he wants to do it. But he came to M Sport just before Christmas for a couple of days, and I got the opportunity to spend a bit of time with him there. He's a driver I've not actually really worked with at all in the past, apart from saying the odd hello. So it was a new experience for a lot of us, including myself. But he is really quite a nice guy. He's quite amenable. He's, like I say, focused, knows what he wants. And he's not, you know, he pushes the team in a way that's really quite motivating. You know, he's already proven that he can deliver if we give him what he needs. So it motivates the guys to just work as hard as you can to get them everything they want. If we do our job perfectly, it's over to them, and they're doing their job perfectly so far. So, you know, you can just see every single detail between the two of him and Julian is really thought out from word go to the finish stage, the finish of the event. You know, even small little things like where they want co-driver bags in the recce cars, and you know, everything is just detailed down. And a massive 3-page debrief on the event of the points they want to look at and things. You know, so it's great to have all this improvement back, feedback, so that we can improve the team and hopefully get all our drivers winning.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, listen, Rich, I just wanted to kind of just hear your thoughts on that moment of being alongside Malcolm when the results came through. And as you say, Oit finished the stage the way any flying finish should be done, as far as I'm concerned.
I think it should be, you should get extra points for that.
That's a great call, that, by the way.
Like some bonus points for style or something, style points, like in diving or something.
I think the FIA should be lobbied just on the proviso of just watching that last 5 seconds going over the finish. But
great for us. I mean, it's an absolute privilege for me to be even sat in there, let alone sat next to Malcolm when we win the first rally in 5 years, you know, from someone who was a club rallyer for a bit of fun when he first started, to doing that now and the team effectively winning what is one of the most difficult rallies on the championship. You can't kind of write that story, and I think that there's a lot of people in the team that are very similar backgrounds to myself, and you know, for all of us, we're just pure rally enthusiasts, so to be able to win a rally as well is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I was there, I was watching it on WRC Plus, and I proper got into it. It's the first time, do you know what, obviously, you know, we're all rally fans. I think that's what it comes down to. I work in it, obviously, I still do a bit, you know, a bit of competing and stuff like that, be like yourself, club stuff and that type of thing. But I was really captured in that moment, and I was so rooting. I had fingers crossed, everything, and, I think we're all a little bit attached to M Sport in a strange kind of way. And I'm not just saying that because you're on, but I think I've said this before on the podcast. everybody knows somebody at M Sport. It's like that 5 degrees of separation thing. We're all connected at some point.
Yeah, we are.
And I think that's what it is. I think that's what's a little bit special about M Sport.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a really good group of guys. You know, we've got a lot of guys. And like I say, a lot of them are passionate. So a lot of them are involved in club rallying, whereas some of the other teams, it's professional motorsport people who don't have such a bigger input as maybe or spend their spare time doing what the guys at M Sport do. And we have so much involvement with national level competitors, and our contact database is so huge that although we do everything on a professional level, we tend to be quite friendly with all our competitors and everything. And, you know, we've had so many messages, hundreds and hundreds of messages of well done, thank yous, good lucks, and all this over the course of the week, which is amazing to see and really helps to boost the team as well. So, yeah, we're a bit of a family, an extended family, I think is the best way to put it. But, you know, and we're an underdog, and we have been for a few years. So to come in now with the new regulations that have been so popular and so, you know, looked out for by all the fans wanting it to come along, to come and take the first victory is a bit of it is a dream come true.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Rich, I'm going to let you get back to just being busy. I don't even know. I just know you're busy. So I'm going to leave you to it. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, mate. Can you come back again soon?
Of course I can.
Happy days. Listen, Rich Milner, M Sport, congratulations all there from all of us and all our listeners as well, of course. And folks, we'll be back next week, normally in your little podcast hole every Wednesday or Thursday. And again, spread the love. And you can find us on Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally.